My name is Michaela Jordan Murray from Catskill, New York, and you're listening to WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM.
The Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
Wayfarm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wayfarm and our radio station, WGXC, operate and broadcast. The Mohicans named themselves the people of the waters that are never still, following their arrival along the Mohicanitta, the great ebb tide river also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For further information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Jeff Economy of Kingston, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Don't cry now. something like a bird within her sing. All I know, she sang a little while and then flew on. Tell me all that you know, I'll show you snow.
You're listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM. This program is Bequency and my name is Mayuko. Bequency invites the local community to be inspired by the joy, beauty, and wisdom bird enthusiasts find in the nature of our own neighborhoods. Every episode features an interview with local bird people, plus a free-form mix of sounds made by birds and humans inspired by birds. We started today's show with Bird Song by Jerry Garcia because the local birder that I interviewed for today's show was apparently an original deadhead. The guest's name is Larry Fetterman, a former Audubon Society education coordinator and president of the local Audubon chapter, Northern Catskills Audubon. Larry is also a lifelong musician, and in this interview, he discusses his music career and how his musical ears help him observe the pitch and intervals of bird songs. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Thanks for tuning in. This is Bequency.
Could you introduce yourself as a birder first?
Sure. My name is Larry Fetterman. As a birder, I've always been interested in birds. My dad got me interested when I was growing up in Queens, right near the old World's Fair site. We would go on walks around the lake, and I was probably 6, 7, 8 years old, and not much of a birder back then. But I really embraced it. I really love the idea of flying, and birds embody that. So I can live vicariously through their freedom. I've been watching and listening to birds for all of my life. When my daughter was 3 years old, we were driving across the Rip Van Winkle Bridge. I was taking her to swimming lessons, and she looked out the window and said, "Daddy, what's that big bird flying next to the car?" And it turned out it was an adult bald eagle. So this was 30 years ago. I had not done too much birding over the course of years before that, but a light went off in my head and said, "I've got to get involved in birding somewhere, somehow." So I found our local Audubon chapter, Northern Catskills Audubon, and I joined. And within a very short amount of time, I was elected to the vice president seat, the role, and then that turned into the president's role, and I'm still the president of our local Audubon chapter. It's approximately 400 members. And I really take advantage of the 400 member number when I write advocacy letters to our legislators. And I can say, you know, on behalf of the 400 member Northern Catskills Audubon Society, this is how we feel. Would appreciate your support. So over the last 30 years working with Audubon, I was able to take my volunteer role, and I turned that into a career for over almost 16 years. I got hired by Audubon New York, the state program of National Audubon, and I was the assistant warden and education coordinator for three sanctuaries. One is the Ramshorn Livingston Sanctuary in the village and town of Catskill. Then there are two across the river, one in Columbia County, Rhinestrom Hill, and one in Dutchess County, Buttercup Farm Sanctuary. And I started off doing all the mowing, trimming, landscape work, and things that you would associate a warden type work to do. And also I created education programs, and I designed them and ran them for any age group from preschoolers through college students and for adults. And I'm still doing my bird work after my Audubon career. And I'm doing bird consulting and also leading bird walks, which is where I met Mayuko. And that's my my birding life.
Great, thank you. What I learned about you, in addition to being a birder, is you're also a musician.
Right. That I started playing guitar. Guitar is my principal instrument. I started playing guitar when I was 13. And that's, oh my gosh, over 50 years ago. And what brought me upstate was a band that I was in. Six of us decided to move out of New York City, and we moved up to the New Paltz area in 1973. And we thought we were going to be the next band, you know, the band out of Woodstock. We were in a one-room house. It was a small house. It was painted yellow. So instead of big pink from the band, we were little yellow. But unfortunately, our style of music did not play well in the immediate area. We were a country rock band, which in the early 70s wasn't the most popular genre. So we couldn't get gigs at the rock and roll places. We couldn't get gigs at the country places because we were too country or we were too rock and roll. The band lasted 4 months. And five out of six moved back down to the New York City area, and I stayed upstate. And I found it was easy for me to get gigs playing country music, playing straight country music. And I relearned a lot of the music that I was playing in my six-piece band that I didn't realize was from mainstream country artists like Merle Haggard and George Jones, Loretta Lynn. But because I had the background of playing these songs in a semi-stylized manner, I was able to get gigs with different country singers in Ulster County and Dutchess County. And I've been playing country rock, and it's been a career. I've been able to do that, and I still play. I'm in the local five-piece country band called Thunder Ridge. One of the singers and I put together a duo right before COVID hit. We call ourselves Gray Matter. Obviously, it wasn't the best time to try to embark on a new musical endeavor, but we're picking back up again, and we're gigging. And I just started with a new outfit, a woman who has a seven-song CD of all her material, Laura Zarugian. We have several gigs coming up. So I've got three projects going on right now, music-wise.
That's great. You pronounce her name Zarugian?
Zarugian, yeah.
And she has some Armenian background?
Yes. She's of Armenian and Egyptian descent. She lived in Armenia for a little while. I'm trying to get back to her roots. But I think she was originally from the Boston area, and now she's based in Dutchess County.
You said there was a Labor Day weekend has something happening.
Right. She's going to be having a CD release party on the Saturday of Labor Day weekend.
And you are playing with her.
Yes.
That day. And where is this location?
It's going to be at on her property. They have a barn that's been redone. Yeah, so it's going to be a big hootenanny shindig at her place.
You still play guitar, and you started, you're self-taught.
I'm self-taught. I took some lessons right in the beginning. You know, we're going back to, 1966 or so. I took guitar lessons from a folk singer who had a big book of folk songs, and he would say, what song would you like to sing? And then we would learn the chords based on songs that were familiar to me. And then I went on to my first band. We were all learning our instruments at the same time, and I fell into the role of more of a lead guitar player. So I was the one playing melodies, and to this day I play guitar everywhere. Whenever, if we're sitting around the living room in the evening watching TV, I have an unplugged electric guitar, and I just run my fingers playing along with the TV themes, with movie themes, with commercials, and it's ear training, and it's just keeping my fingers limber, but it's also keeping my ears open and listening to different things.
Hmm. Were you growing up listening to country music? Is that how you?
Absolutely not. my first bands in Forest Hills, we got into, which was crazy, we got into West Coast rock and roll music. We were never into the Beatles, never into the Rolling Stones.
Mm-hmm.
We were the original Deadheads.
Oh.
I listened to Grateful Dead, New Riders of the Purple Sage. And then going off from the New Riders country aspect, we get into Graham Parsons, Emmylou Harris, Flying Burrito Brothers. And then on the rock and roll end, you had Buffalo Springfield, we had the Byrds. So that was the country aspect, but our gigging was few and far between in Queens. We were very young, but also we were into improvisational music. So listening to the Grateful Dead, that's who took us on our journeys. At one point we had a female singer, so we were able to do Jefferson Airplane music. And we had, none of us had ever been to California, which was very interesting, but we somehow fell in love with that style and that freedom. And as I said, after the band moved upstate and disbanded, then I went in that more traditional country direction. But my roots, I love throwing rock and roll melodies in country songs. And it's funny how when one thing I used to do, there's the famous song written by Willie Nelson, Help Me Make It Through the Night. And I play the melody of Procol Harum's Whiter Shade of Pale as the solo section in the song Help Me Make It Through the Night. And if people are really listening, mm-hmm. which there are a few people here and there who are that into it, they'll come up and say, did I hear something different than Help Me Make It Through the Night in that song? Yeah. So that's, for me, there's always that the upbringing and my background of rock and roll in my country playing.
You're listening to Bequency on Waveforms WGXC. If you're just joining us, we're listening to my interview with Larry Fetterman, a former Audubon Society education coordinator and president of the local Audubon chapter, Northern Catskills Audubon. Let's listen to the second half of the interview with Larry. Thanks for tuning in.
So, like you said, I met you at the bird walk at Ramshorn Livingston. What I loved about your bird walk when I participated was you really let us take a long pause, like a really long pause. You really help us really listen by giving us a guidance as to, you know, what kind of sound or which direction we should be paying attention to. And I was wondering if this attentiveness came from your experience or expertise as a musician, or do you think it's the birds that kind of train your ears and be more attentive? And I thought this could be a chicken or egg kind of question, but I was curious about that.
Well, definitely they go hand in hand. I think being a musician and having a trained ear for pitch, for intervals, definitely helps with learning birdsong. And one thing that your listeners should be aware of, that we're calling what I do birding and not bird watching.
Mm-hmm.
As I do, when I'm doing my consulting bird surveys or on our bird walks, we're doing as much, if not more, bird identification by ear, especially after the first few spring walks that we'll do, when the trees are leafing out and it's making it much more difficult to see the birds up in the canopy. We can usually identify what birds are in an area by their songs. So then that's why we call it birding and not just bird watching, because we're using our two senses for that. So having the musical ear, and I'm a non-traditionally trained musician. I read music very, very slowly. I learn songs by ear, and that has definitely helped with birdsong, because there's a lot of similarities when you're listening to a musical passage, similarity to what a bird is singing. You can hear if the song is rising in pitch, is it staying on one note, but different rhythms. So definitely, one definitely helps the other. I don't know how much birding has helped my music ear, but definitely being a musician, and now that I've been doing the bird surveying and leading the walks, especially since, you know, working for Audubon, it's definitely helped me hone in on what we're listening to. And what we're trying to listen for is not just what the bird song, the notes are, but we're listening to tone, we're listening to rhythms. So when you listen to a symphony, it's like listening to what instrument is playing that part. Was that an oboe or was it a bassoon? Was it a flute or was it a piccolo? Very similar sounding, but subtle differences. And we can use that when we're trying to identify birds. We're listening to a tufted titmouse. Let's say it has a sweetness to it, but then we hear a Carolina wren that sounds very similar. Well, we're going to take the rhythm of a titmouse, which is a two-syllable song, Peter, Peter, Peter. And compare that to a three-syllable Carolina wren, who typically sings tea kettle, tea kettle, tea kettle. The tones are very similar, but we'll use the word sweeter when it comes to a Carolina wren. So you're going to take a couple of aspects to differentiate between those two. And as you said, on our bird walks, we definitely need to pause. You know, we are very, very gregarious and friendly group on our bird walks, especially at Ramshorn. And it's as much a social gathering time as a birding time. So it's really important for us to stop the chatter and the socializing and take the time to listen. And then we can hear, a lot of times we'll hear offset bird songs, one on one side of the trail, one song on the other side, and we can compare, okay, listen to the left. Here we have a cardinal. Now listen on the right. Hear the difference between that and the tufted titmouse.
You know, it always makes me happy when we take that pause. Also, somehow, when you meet other people, usually it's to like socialize through conversations, as opposed to what we do, like just standing in the between trees and just like stand there still and just be quiet and just be there together. And I find it really comforting.
Yeah, a couple of expressions come to mind. One, we have to take the time to stop and smell the roses. So instead, we're taking time to stop and listen to the sounds around us, which aren't, you know, depending on if it's early in the spring, it's not just birds. We're going to hear frogs as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but there's also the socialization aspect of it, because you're with like-minded people. And, you know, obviously I don't run the walk where there's absolutely no talking. You know, we've got to have that time for, yeah, oh yeah, I just heard the Carolina wren. And I remember, oh, just the other day I was in my yard and I heard the Carolina, you know, then the other person, I thought I had a Carolina wren. It turned out it was a tufted titmouse, and it finally came out. And so you need to have that connection as well. But you're absolutely right. People going through life, especially in our instant gratification style nowadays, we want, you know, you want to talk, you want to communicate. So it's very important to get out. And that's where nature is such an important aspect in people's lives that, unfortunately, many, many people, or most people, don't take the time to appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
When going back after September 11th, after that horrible day, Audubon opened up all its sanctuaries. Any places that had an admission fee, they didn't charge fees for a couple of weeks after, just to let people get out. And the feedback that we got from people who said, you know, they weren't traveling, they weren't flying, they weren't able to get away, but they were able to go in their neighborhood or go to parks, preserves, sanctuaries, and just breathe. And it was definitely a very, very cathartic experience for many people. And for many people, it's the first time that they actually went out of their homes, and they weren't just going to the car, going to the, from the home to car to work, home to car to school and back again. They were getting out and doing something that they weren't familiar with. Really appreciated that time out in nature.
So for listeners to, you know, join those walks where you can not only learn about birds, but also in a very relaxing, natural way to connect with other people, I really recommend participating in bird walks. And so how can listeners find information on the bird walks that you lead in future? Is there any website or newsletter that people can subscribe to?
My newsletter is just a digital, it's an email list that people can send me an email. And then as events are taking place, or my whole schedule, usually in the early spring, I send out the schedule for the bird walks at Ramshorn and other places. So I can give you my, or Miyuka, you can share the email address with readers.
Okay.
Also, I have a Facebook page. I'm more active on Facebook than I am on Instagram, but I typically will post activities on Facebook, usually a week in advance. I'll put up where the gigs are. Now it's getting complicated because I have the three different band situations. But Facebook is a good place to look around and see what's going on.
So that would be the best place to find your music shows as well.
As well, yes, yes, yep, yep, yep. The birding activity is coming to a slow stop now that the breeding season is just about over. So the birds aren't as active, and they're more interested now in feeding and getting ready for their fall migration.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no upcoming bird walks or talks for the rest of the year.
So it'll be the next year, next spring.
Next spring, yes.
Okay.
And typically the walks start in mid-April, and they go 6 or 7 weeks. And I usually run the walks on Fridays at the Ramshorn Livingston Sanctuary. And I have a couple of places where I do my traditional annual walks, the Mountaintop Arboretum up in Tannersville, and some other places as calls come in.
I'll make sure to announce that in maybe late winter or early spring on the radio show. Yeah, when it comes to that season again.
Terrific.
What was your last exciting bird encounter in the Hudson Valley?
I get a similar question all the time. What's your favorite bird? That's like asking a parent, who's your favorite child?
That's a very good way to put it. Yeah.
It's a difficult question to answer. There are spark birds. That's the bird that got people or gets people involved in birding mm-hmm. initially. But for me, the most exciting. So our littlest falcon, the American kestrel, we've noticed, or I've noticed over the last 25, 30 years that their numbers have been declining. And my concern hadn't been raised by the greater ornithological community until fairly recently. So kestrel has always been a favorite bird of mine. And the last exciting encounter I had was while doing this last project for Hudsonia over in Dutchess County. After 5 out of my 9 contracted survey days, I finally had a kestrel fly over. And it was actively hunting a field. These are birds of grasslands. Their primary food is grasshoppers and small rodents. So to me, that was very exciting. And probably if somebody saw me out in the field, they probably thought there's some lunatic out there, because I'm very vocal. And I probably exclaimed, yes, I can't believe it. Finally. Yay. Hooray.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate your time. And
I appreciate you reaching out. This is great. I thank you so much. It was great meeting you at Ramshorn.
Yeah, and I hope to come back next spring for the walks again.
Did you wanna write it down, or was that just a lie? Did you meet a blue-eyed girl? Was she sweet when she smiled? New York City, or a kettle of coal? I have gone the long dark mile and put in all my winter clothes. I won't see you for a while, and I can tell your head.
You're listening to Be Gwency on WGXE Radio, and we heard a song titled Cairo by Laura Zarugian, one of the music projects that Larry Fetterman, my today's guest, is participating in. And they have a show coming up on August 5th at Chromatic Studios in Kingston, New York. And there's that album release show that Larry mentioned in the interview is on September 2nd at the Barn in Red Hook. You can find more details on Laura's website at laurazarugian.com, which spells Laura as the name, L-A-U-R-A, Zarugian, Z-A-R-O-U-G-I-N.com. Thunderbridge is another band that he plays with, and they have also shows throughout the summer until November, almost every week in August, it seems like, and all happening in our neighborhoods. I'm sure you can find one that's happening near you. And so you can find out those shows information at their event calendar, which is at the Vocalist website at Doraine.com. Doraine is her name, Doraine.com. And the third music project of Larry's, which is called Gray Matter, you can find their information at gray-mattermusic.com. Larry's bird walks and talks are not happening until next spring, like we discussed in the interview, but why not subscribe to his mailing list now so that you can be notified when they're happening? You can do so by contacting him at birderlarry@verizon.net. Birderlarry is one word, B-I-R-D-E-R. L-A-R-R-Y, birderlarry@verizon.net. I'll be posting links and contact information on today's show note as well. Thanks again to Larry Fetterman for taking time to speak with me for this program, Bequency. As you know, I'm talking here live in the studio at Wave Farm in Accra. I was hearing Titmouse doing that Peter, Peter, Peter outside the window as I was listening to the interview, and now I'm talking now. And you know, since Larry talked about how he learned to pay attention to tones and rhythms of bird songs, I thought today's show is a great opportunity to play this pretty interesting compilation of bird field recordings, which is titled The Bird's World of Song. Came out in 1961 from Folkways record label. It's truly nerd stuff. Hudson and Sandra Ansley collected bird songs at a Maryland farmhouse, and they recorded those sound with a 2-speed tape recorder and then played them back at half speed to magnify the song. Ansley's describe it as using the tape recorder as a sound microscope. And you can read all that nerdy stuff if you're one of those nerdy people by downloading the liner notes of this record, this LP, on Folkways record label website. They're on in the liner notes, they're making comparison between their analysis to some older studies from 1904 by Ferdinand Schuyler Matthews and Aretha Saunders in 1935. Like, those people, apparently some big guys in the field of North American birdsong studies, and they got all the descriptions and diagrams of the birdsongs that these people had made, and they're all on the liner notes, and they're making they're comparing it to with their own analysis and stuff. So it's pretty interesting thing, so I hope you'll enjoy it. That's what we're gonna hear next. Thanks for listening. This is Frequency on WJXC.
But these sounds are different to the birds. Birds live in a different world of sound. For one thing, birds are surprisingly deaf. Their hearing is deficient in both bass and treble registers. Few songbirds can hear such low sounds as, for example, people talking. And far from being able to hear high sounds like dog whistles, The birds take second place in this, even to us. It is simply a reflection of the difference in the length of the cochlea. In mammals, the cochlea is long and coiled. In birds, it is short and straight. Within its limited range, the hearing of birds is very keen. In one respect, they excel us. We are relatively poor at hearing bursts of sound. Our ears cannot cope with as many as 10 impulses a second. Birds easily do twice as well, and most of them sing at that rate. For us, the sounds are blurred, and it becomes difficult to locate the source. The result is that we are just as deaf to birds as they are to us, though for a different reason. Whereas they scarcely hear us at all, save as a low mutter, the twitter we know as birdsong is sheer distortion. We can compensate for this by listening through a sound microscope. In the bird's world, the tohi sounds like this. This use of the intervals of a fourth and a fifth, C, G, D, is the tohi theme, which he varies like a well-trained classical musician. Here the bird gives it as C, G, E, C. Another day he employed an octave and a fifth, F, B flat, B flat. A minute later he was singing C, F, F, C. 5 minutes later, he had it upside down. C, A, G. Another day, he was found to be enlarging on the trill in the following alternate ways. Here is an exchange between two tohis, showing how these variations are sometimes used. A song sparrow is also singing. Two birds in our yard have a phoebe call, the chickadee and the phoebe. Here is the chickadee singing with the phoebe, as we ordinarily hear them. And as they sound through the sound microscope. Chickadee sounds almost unchanged, a pure second interval. But the phoebe has two songs, one like that of the chickadee but with a burr, The other, a sprightly tune in a minor key. The pattern of the second Phoebe song is not unlike the Towhee's four-note phrase. Here is how the wood thrush sounds to other birds. Becomes evident, a pattern of statement and response. Essentially, we have but a pair of songs repeated four times with an odd song by itself in the middle. The pair of songs, or statement response, goes like this. First the statement, then the response. The statement is little more than the Towhee's theme. Response, a harmonically related chord, also sometimes used by the Towhee. Here the Towhee sings its theme immediately after the thrush's statement. Here's the thrush's response, followed by an example of the Towhee's use of it. Both birds like to turn the songs upside down. Here is the statement of the thrush, followed immediately by the Towhee's theme, both similarly inverted. The meadowlark, too, has a theme, which recalls that of the Towhee. But whereas the Towhee uses the same natural harmonics as those on which the diatonic scale was founded, the music of the meadowlark is atonal, with the result that instead of sounding sweet, meadowlark songs have a sour quality. Also like the Towhee, the meadowlark varies its theme. But here we enter into an altogether more advanced form of musical composition, for the meadowlark is capable of expanding its simple theme into an opening and closing bar. And of varying each bar separately. Condensing the song into one bar, and of fusing the basic couplets to the sliding, indefinite scale in which it sings. The two wrens in our yard, the house and the Carolina, do not sound much alike. The Carolina wren sounds like a small bugle. The song of the house wren is bubbling. But when we hear them through the sound microscope, we are almost prepared to believe that they are singing the same song. The Carolina wren is given first, followed immediately by the house wren. Actually, the two songs have entirely different scores. The reason they can be made to sound so much more alike than they really are is that the house wren sings twice as fast as the Carolina wren, and when this difference is removed, it is suddenly apparent that both birds are singing phrases of a similar character. Actually, the two wrens do sing some of the same phrases, or very similar ones, though it would be fairly undiscerning of us on this account to call their songs the same. Both birds often sing on the tonic triad. Here, for instance, is the house wren in the key of C minor, followed by the Carolina wren in the key of F minor. And here is another instance of a house wren phrase which recalls the Carolina wren. But one thing Carolina wrens do which a house wren never does is to give true bugle calls. And often the songs of the Carolina wren would make good dance tunes, which cannot be said of the songs of the house wren. One Carolina wren song goes, "Come in here, right now." Another goes, "I see through your sham." Another goes, "See Chicago." The biggest difference in the songs of the two birds is an overall structure, however. There is only one phrase in the Carolina wren song, whereas house wren songs are divided into three or four parts, introductory passages, a main theme, and one or two concluding sections. The house wren always announces the main theme first and then proceeds to add sections before and after it. Up his song, he also varies the theme. One such theme is "Shut the Door," which later becomes "Please Shut the Door." Other modifications of this theme are entirely different phrases used by this bird may be heard in the following song. Such mincing chromatic patterns are never found in the songs of the Carolina wren. We may then ask whether all members of the same species sing alike. That is, do all house wrens, for instance, sing the same set of phrases? Again, the answer is, they do not. There are what might be called hereditary motifs on which each individual rings its own changes. "Shut the Door" is such a motif. Similar phrases appear as the main theme in the songs of three other house wrens thus. The "See Chicago" theme of our Carolina wren plays a similar role. Another Carolina wren puts it thus, "See Chicago and die." Another presents it as a catchy folk dance tune. Still another turns it about and presents it in waltz time as "After Chicago." Again, it is interesting to compare notes between species. The Towhee's theme could pass for a variant of "After Chicago." And this means, of course, that the same goes for the Phoebe, the wood thrush, and the meadowlark. The nearest relative of the Carolina wren, if we were to classify birds by song alone, would, however, be a Maryland yellowthroat. The yellowthroat song, when analyzed, turns out to have the same character of a light gay dance tune that characterizes the songs of the Carolina wren.
Oh. Suddenly realize I'm almost running out of time. So those were the two tracks. The last one we didn't get to hear all of them, but two tracks from The Bird's World of Song by Hudson and Sandra Ansley. Listening through a sound microscope to birds around a Maryland farmhouse, songs known only to the birds. Towhee, that's the first one we heard. You know, they call it red-eyed towhee in the liner note, which confused me a little bit until I looked it up and I learned that it was an old name used until the late 1950s for eastern towhee and spotted towhee, which were considered the same species until the 90s, and then the eastern and spotted towhee split into two species or something like that. Anyhow, all these bird names. And then the second track was simply titled Wrens. I'm sorry we couldn't listen to all the until the end of it, but I hope you enjoyed. I'm still a beginner birder, so I'm not going to pretend that I can tell you how much of this bird song analysis is accurate or what, but I find the deadpan narration, you know, really deadpan narration, has very calming effect, kind of similar to the Ghost Orchid, do you know, an introduction to EVP, the electronic voice phenomenon by Raymond Cass. It came out a few years ago, where they tried to analyze recordings of, like, supposedly ghost voices. Similar vibe. And interesting music quality to them, too. Very calming. Bird songs. Very calming. Anyhow, that's it for my show today. This program has been Bequency, and I have been Mayuko, and you're listening to Waveforms WGXC. Coming up next is the countdown produced by Tom Rowe, counting down 10 new sounds, stories, or songs in American Top 40 style. So don't go anywhere, but you can go somewhere if you're in the area. And if you want to come visit us here at Wave Farm in Accra, it's the Upstate Art Weekend, and our art park and study center, they're open to the public. For more information, visit wavefarm.org. Thanks for listening. I hope to see you next time.